It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bolland, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys.
Hello, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm, of course, your co-host, Shri, and alongside my podcast, sidekick and friend, Peter V.S. Bond. And here he is today. And when he's not co-hosting this podcast, he helps enterprise brands improve their SEO, SEM, growing the e-com business as partnership acceleration lead for none other than the new Flywheel division of Omnicom. Please, of course, listen to my older daughter Ria Raj's music at www.riaraj.com. That's R-H-E-A-R-A-J with her new hit single, Messy. And follow my younger daughter Laura on a journey as a founding member of the Cat's Eye Girls band by High Geffen Records, which debuts its first album shortly. More to come on that. Peter, how is it sitting up there in Connecticut today? It's hot and humid in Kolkata, like I thought, over in India at the time of this recording, and I'm visiting my mother for a quick couple of days before business reckons. So are you in the deep chills, losing power? Like, what's going on?
Well, you know, we don't lose power anymore since we got the generator at the house. So that's not a problem. The big thing this weekend was my daughter Nadia's fifth birthday. Of course, the theme, not surprising, Frozen, Disney, very on brand with my daughter. And what was interesting is Shri, she was singing this weekend and she actually sang happy birthday to herself. And she was remarkably on key. And all of a sudden I thought, wait.
Hey.
Could there be performing artist capabilities on this side of the CPG guy equation? I don't know.
And now, live from Connecticut.
I know. It could be big, Sri. But yeah, meanwhile, other than that, I'm looking forward to you and me getting together. We got Shop Talk coming up. We're going to talk all things e-commerce and omni-channel and maybe record some episodes and just have a good time together and talk a little bit about going into the baseball season, which is about to kick off.
One quick question, though, Peter, before I start talking about a guest and we start getting into the depths of this episode.
Sure.
So the theme of the party was Frozen.
Frozen, yeah.
I'm going to make an assumption here. You have saved a piece of cake for me and it's frozen. Get it?
Oh, we have a big piece of frozen cake. I'll bring it to Vegas. I will bring it to Vegas.
And you owe me one from last year, too.
I do. Well, I've got that one in the freezer. So I think I'm going to pack them up in dry ice and have them in our suite at Mandalay Bay for when you arrive on Sunday morning.
Meanwhile, it's time. Pitchers and catchers. How long have we waited?
Oh, dude, we've been waiting. It feels like an eternity, Sri. I know it's only been a couple of months, but...
Your October baseball lasted one extra day than mine, so...
My thing, Sri, is I just downloaded Babbel, and I'm trying to learn Japanese, and I think you know why.
I'm good with Juan Soto. I'm not complaining.
A little Yamamoto and some Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. $750 million. Hopefully, there's no second Tommy John. There's no problems. But, you know, I long for a Yankees-Dodgers World Series, and maybe with the all-star cast that both teams have, maybe this is the year.
Well, how about we start with this? Let's you and I commit that we're going to go see the Dodgers play at Yankee Stadium this year, because it's one of those years.
Oh, not missing that. If the date's already circled, we've exchanged enough texts, we're going that.
We're doing it.
Before we get to our guests, let me ask you to spread the word about our community here we've created called the CPG Guys. Beyond sharing a podcast with your friends, if you're using Apple Podcasts, Spotify as your preferred listening platform, leave us a rating as it helps feed the algorithm that makes us more findable by CPG and retail, like you, looking for education and entertainment. We're happy that the CPG Guys is part of an impressive collection of highly rated podcasts, including CPG Guys Fast Forward, hosted by Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with Risa and Jennifer, and the FMCG Guys with none other than our friends over in Europe, Daniel Lefrain and Christine, whose incredible rise to famousness in Europe is nothing short of amazing. And finally, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, whose mission is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has terrific educational and networking resources available to its members. And me, of course, Sri, serves as the director of Next Up, leading the fundraising and development committee. Links to our podcast, our sister cast, our landing page on Next Up, and the social media profiles of my daughter Ria and Laura may be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. So finally, let's get this conversation going. So commerce media is the modern advertising discipline that closes the attribution loop between brand impressions and point of sale transactions to improve audience targeting, provides buyer insights, and delivers more relevant online and offline experiences for consumers. It touches every brand to shopper and retailer to shopper interaction from awareness to the commerce transaction. And can there be a better platform to discuss this very topic, Peter, than the CPG Guys? Brand investments in commerce media has been exploding in the last few years, pushing this modern advertising discipline to become more performance-driven and deliver on ROAS, because we always decompose buzzwords and acronyms on the CPG Guys. That's return on ad spending for those of you coming in from other industries. For digital experiences, it was easy to build in programmatic solutions to identify the right audiences and track every interaction to the point of sale. But what about offline experiences? The question that I deal with all the time. How can brands identify the right audiences and target them in real life at the point of purchase when they're browsing and moving down the consideration set? How do we build audience targeting and programmatic solutions when laptops are down, phones are down, or not driven by billboards or standing in the middle of Times Square? That's what today will be about. Oz in-store traffic is back. And of course, here on the CPG Guys, Peter and I have been really seeing that maybe for a year right now that a lot of attention needs to return back to the store. I know e-commerce, omnichannel, meteoric rise fame, but it is peaking at some point. Growth rates are slowing, the action's back in store. So who did we choose to partner with today? None other than Recess. Our guests today got started as event organizers promoting large-scale music festivals. We may actually have something in common in and around college campuses. Then launched a digital ad network at the same time. So had a unique understanding of both physical and digital sides of marketing, seeing all other forms of media moving to programmatic, addressable exchanges. It became clear to his co-founder and he that eventually experiential sponsorship would follow every other form of media that is commoditized, scaled on an exchange and bought and sold using data to make decisions, not humans. So please help us welcome to the podcast none other than Jack Shannon, co-founder of Recess. Jack, how's it going back there in lovely LA?
Hey, Sri, Peter. Excited to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate you making time to speak with us about the new world of experiential consumer or audience targeting, rather. But before we get to our questions, why don't you give us a quick high-level overview of who Recess is and then your role as co-founder and CEO?
Sure. Yeah, I'm Jack Shannon, CEO and co-founder of Recess. Recess is a software platform that helps connect CPG brands to unique offline marketing opportunities all across the U.S. So we make it easy for brands to reach their target audience within trusted communities like fitness studios like Equinox, co-working spaces like WeWork, college campuses, farmers markets, music festivals, and more. So we reach over 250 million people annually across all of these events and opportunities on our platform, makes us the largest offline marketing network in the world. So traditionally, these types of partnerships were executed by sampling agencies, in-house teams, experiential agencies, and they were very manual, hard to scale, expensive, tough to measure. In Recess, we believe there's a better way. We are big believers in the power of getting products into the hands of people, especially in CPG where tasting is believing. And we wanted to bring that type of marketing kind of into the 21st century. So we work with all different types of CPG brands. You know, for example, a brand like Molson Coors came to us with a ZOA energy drink, a new energy drink from The Rock. They wanted to reach active lifestyle consumers in gyms and fitness studios, but they also wanted to put a focus on reaching 7-Eleven shoppers where they had, you know, a lot of distribution there for the product. So our platform is able to kind of combine those two targeting capabilities and surface gyms and locations and those types of places that are going to over-index on 7-Eleven shoppers. And then we make it easy to coordinate omni-channel marketing programs to reach those audiences. So sampling the product within the location and then targeting those folks digitally after the fact to drive them into 7-Eleven to purchase either online or in-store. So removing a lot of the pain points, the headaches that's traditionally come with that type of marketing and streamlining everything into, you know, a software platform that can make it easy to do those things and obviously important to be able to measure the success of those programs and campaigns as well.
Thank you so much for that overview. Of course, for our audience, in the digital liner notes of this episode, we'll include links not just to Jack's LinkedIn profile, but also the company website and the company's LinkedIn profile. So you can actually access it on the go right here as you listen to our conversation. Jack, you ready, man? Because question number one's coming right at you. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
So take our audience through your own experience in this space, you know, perhaps you standing in store, offline, experiential, and how you got from graduating Indiana University with a, let's see, I'm connecting the dots here, Indiana University finance degree, all the way to music marketing, events, festivals, and then into experiential marketing by a CEO of Recess. So tell us your career story and how you got there and then how you experience experiential marketing yourself offline.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I went to school in Indiana. I decided to go west instead of going east and working in finance. So I moved to California, started working at a large talent agency. So kind of understood the world of entertainment and concerts. I connected with my co-founder who was still back at Indiana. And at the time, dance music, EDM was getting really popular here in the States. And so myself and my co-founder started organizing and throwing large-scale concerts and music festivals in and around college campuses, reaching thousands of people. So we built that business for a number of years on the side. Eventually, I got connected to Mark Cuban, who was a fellow Indiana University alum who became our first investor. And you know, Mark's investment and that confidence allowed me to leave the day job at the talent agency and join my co-founder and break off on our entrepreneurial journey, you know, that kind of led to where we were today.
Jack, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here today. So it's nice to know that you have a background as an aspiring Ari Gold before you made a pivot from the entourage direction you were going on and now entered the entrepreneurial world. So you mentioned Mark Cuban, know him very well, Shark Tank, what a great franchise that he's been able to build. But obviously, moving into this world of starting a company after being a talent agency, that's a big change. Walk us through kind of like the founding of the company. What specifically, you know, Cuban aside, what specifically was the inspiration around this? And why did you feel like you could create a solution that would not only compete, but actually lead in this space?
Yeah, we were, you know, like I mentioned, we were event organizers ourselves. So we've built a platform that can connect event organizers, business owners to CPG brands. So we were living this world ourselves, organizing events and concerts, connecting with sponsors. And we saw, you know, big companies like IMG Learfield or Live Nation that had built these big aggregated audiences that were allowing them to land larger sponsorship contracts. And on the digital side of our business, we had websites that were plugged into Complex's network, Vice's network, that would give us deals when they didn't have enough inventory on Vice.com. They, you know, call us up and would run the ads on our websites. So we understood the world of marketing ad networks and also understood the offline world and just kind of saw all these other media channels moving to online addressable exchanges. You know, influencers, the talent agency, we used to rep big famous influencers or actors that would get paid lots of dollars to tweet at the time. But now that industry has moved towards platform-based approach where you can partner with thousands of micro or nano influencers to give you a much more authentic engagement for that. So those types of programs weren't possible before you had software to scale those. And I think we saw that happen, obviously, in the digital space, in the influencer space. It's happened in out-of-home, happening in OTT. And experiential sampling sponsorship was kind of this last bucket of significant ad spend that brands invested in, but was still done, you know, over phone calls, contracts, spreadsheets, emails. So we understood those pain points firsthand. And I think that's why, you know, we felt like we were kind of uniquely qualified to solve this problem. There's been 10 or 15 companies that have come before us that have tried to tackle this. And I think having been in the messy trenches of event marketing and also having, you know, built businesses on the digital side, it was kind of a unique combo that enabled us to see that events in, you know, this type of marketing, everyone assumes it's very custom, very manual, that you could never scale those types of things, that those always had to be kind of one-to-one and done very manually. But we knew there was ad units out there like the 300 by 250 or the 720 by 90 in digital. The physical equivalent to that was the 10 by 10 space or the 10 by 20 space. So that was kind of the catalyst, was saying, hey, let's remove all of the customization and let's start and boil this down to very specific ad units that you could, you know, actually buy and sell at scale. And, you know, you could put onto a technology platform to use data to make those decisions versus, you know, just kind of making them manually. So we knew that was going to be the key to building a big business. Otherwise, everything is going to be manual.
Hey, Jack, you used a term early in your answer called OTT. We love to break down acronyms here. You want to share with our audience what OTT means and why it's important?
Yeah, so over the top. So if you're watching YouTube TV or you're not delivered your cable through like a traditional cable box provider, you know, the way that I think television has evolved from a buying standpoint now where you can get very targeted, you know, and buy those ad units on an exchange and on a platform versus a traditional more direct buy. So just another form of media that
it's streaming versus linear television, right? It's visual content that's being streamed. That's great. Thank you for that, Sri.
Wait, outside Sunday football, let's say Super Bowl, Grammy and the Oscars, there's still a linear TV? Like it actually exists?
I think it might.
I'm going to go try to buy one. But Jack, jokes apart, I want to get into this very topic in a deeper way now, which is let's talk sampling. Over the pandemic, I think all three of us can agree for hygienity concerns, sampling basically came to an absolute standstill. And for a large part, for about a year and a half or so, died. My best personal benchmark for sampling is walking the up and down the aisles of Costco on a Saturday, where you can get a complete meal if you choose to just walk in store over a half hour just by sampling. But what are you seeing now? Are the brands you work with excited about going back to sampling? How do they connect the art of sampling to experiential marketing, which is storytelling, not just simply giving product and get someone? Taste is very much a sensory experience required in experiential marketing, but that alone cannot cut it. So what role do y'all play in that alone cannot cut it?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the pandemic. It's a really interesting topic because that definitely was a very disruptive time for our industry overall. You know, a lot of brands had to let go of their field teams or let go of their agencies. There weren't a lot of events happening. It ended up being a big catalyst for our business, though, because we did have a handful of, you know, events like drive-in movie theaters or drive-through concerts that were operating during the pandemic. And it was almost a forcing function for us to move away from selling the 10 by 10 space to the agency or the activation team to working directly with brands where they shipped their product samples out to these events and venues who distributed them on their behalf. So it was kind of a light bulb for us. It ended up being much cheaper, much more scalable for brands to partner with these events and communities to get their product out there. You know, they could work with 200 drive-in movie theaters all on the same day at the same time and really get, you know, a huge reach that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to do with their own team. So it was a huge boom for us because, you know, we were one of the only people operating and were able to acquire a lot of customers at that time. But I think brands have really embraced this idea of turnkey sampling, not necessarily needing to rely on a brand ambassador to communicate those story points, but maybe leveraging an email blast from that partner that's distributing the product or a social post or using other omni-channel assets to tell that brand story versus relying on a staff member to do that. So, you know, we're seeing brands that they want to get, you know, they want to reach into these niche communities like an Orange Theory or an Equinox that have these, you know, cult-like or tribe-like followings. To be able to get your products in those moments is incredibly powerful. But doing it traditionally the offline way, you know, it took a lot of effort. It took a lot of time. And so that's what we're trying to facilitate is being able to do that on a huge scale. So I think brands are thinking about these types of partnerships in the same way they would a big sports team sponsorship. But now, you know, there are tools to be able to scale those partnerships. You could work with 1,000 gyms for the price of maybe one, you know, sports or team sponsorship. So the other bucket we see is brands are wanting to reach consumers in these pivotal moments, students moving into their first apartment after college or someone buying their first house or getting to your Airbnb for Coachella or a ski trip and finding a stocked fridge of surprise items for surprise and delight. So capturing consumers in these really powerful moments and, you know, finding ways to do that very efficiently is really important. And I also think today marketing isn't going, you know, everybody needs to be proving what they're doing. You know, stats and metrics and measurement is not going back the other way. It's only getting more scrutinized. So brands want to, you know, be able to run these campaigns. It's not enough to just say how many people did we reach. They want to know how many people did we drive back to purchase at the retailer? You know, what was the ROAS for the campaign? And really being able to provide that data and that impressions. Offline marketing, if it's going to enter the performance area and become a true weapon for these brands, it needs to kind of step up to the plate and get in line with a lot of the other forms of media that are able to offer those stats and metrics and measurement.
That's terrific, Jack. So let's now shift to Recess's platform. Can you walk us through the capabilities of how your customers are leveraging the platform to build an event or campaign around your mechanism? I think you call it picking an affinity. So how do they target an affinity while keeping it omni-channel? And kind of walk us through what that means, if you would.
Yeah, so when a brand comes to us, no different than they would going to a different agency partner or someone like that, they can say, hey, here's the target audience I'm trying to reach. I want to reach women, active lifestyle, 24 to 35. And so, you know, we can help them understand of all of the different places and spaces that we have on our platform, which ones make the most sense? Is that fitness studios? Is it endurance races like Spartan Race? You know, where does it make sense from a kind of moment in time and place in order to reach those types of folks? So that's what we, you know, frame as like the affinity. But then we can layer audience targeting over on top of that. So they might say, yeah, but my product just launched in Whole Foods. So I want to reach people that are at these group fitness classes like Orange Theory or F45, but I really want to reach Whole Foods customers or Target shoppers or Kroger shoppers. So we can layer that retailer targeting on top. If they have specific things that they need to do, my product needs to be served cold, it's frozen, we have those filters and capabilities. So it is a self-serve platform, but we also provide a managed service for most of our clients. So we'll kind of set their whole program up. We'll help them understand the partners that they're working with. Can those partners offer digital amplification for the program? Can they send out a digital coupon afterwards via email? Or can we take the social handles from those partners and target ads back to that same consumer audience to, you know, hit them from both the physical and the digital standpoint? And then they'll choose how are they going to measure that campaign. We have some, you know, built-in measurement capabilities into our product, but they could also push to a digital coupon. They could push into a, you know, a platform like Ibotta or Fetch Rewards to be driving conversions on their offers. They might be looking to drive ratings and reviews for the product. So really whatever their kind of goal or objective is, we'll help them, you know, build all of that together and set that up for success. And then our team from there handles everything. So it's totally turnkey. And, you know, we coordinate if there is a physical sample or a product that's going out to the partners, how does that get to that location? And then all the recaps, the reporting, the proof of performance is all done through our tool too. So, you know, a lot of that work traditionally would have been billable hours that that brand would have spent. And so we've just built a lot of those workflows into our tool and our software to bring the price down and make it more accessible for more brands.
You know what? I honestly can't think of a better topic for where we are in the industry as brands and manufacturers look to bring baseline turns, get their innovation to be more sticky as opposed to promos, which is probably getting to be an all-time high overall in the CPG industry. So the timing for this conversation could not be better, especially with Shop Talk coming up here in a few weeks. Let me remind our audience that we're speaking with Jack Shannon, who is the co-founder and CEO of Recess, your brand activation platform to discover unique experiential partnerships and, of course, omnichannel sampling opportunities for your target audience. So, Jack, thank you for that detailed explanation, how to work with you and what to expect and how it'll impact the in-store and online business. But you already have a client base. You've already been working with the industry. This is not a first for you. There are brands that you do this with today. You mentioned Fetch, Ibotta, partners for the low-end, lower-funnel conversion piece. So give us examples of categories where you've seen success, maybe a case study or two, and how are you measuring this for brands?
Yeah, so CPG is obviously a huge category for us, and there's a lot of obvious use cases like new product innovations, new brands want to get people to try and get out into market. Some brands might have expiring inventory and they want to maximize the value of that and put that to good use. So those are some of the more common use cases. I think with our ability to understand where are those retailer audiences actually in the real world now? So being able to, you know, target Kroger shoppers out in the real world or Target shoppers out in the real world, it's opened up some new
capabilities. Jack, if you don't mind me interrupting there for one quick second, you referred to an industry problem that's existed for decades, right? Which is expiring product, which typically goes into, unfortunately, into damage and destroy for most large companies. So if you can clarify for our audience, because they care about it a lot, are you referring to excess inventory sitting in a warehouse somewhere of the manufacturer? Are you referring to maybe products sitting on the shelf that's already in store because that's what you get to sample?
The former. So it's in a warehouse. It might not be, you know, coded to be able to be sold at retail, but it hasn't expired yet. So there might be a 2-month shelf life still on it, or a 1-month shelf life even, or a 3-month shelf life. And so we have, you know, regular customers that will come to us and they say, hey, we don't want to just sell this at auction, or we don't want to have to throw it away and waste it. You know, we want to be able to actually get value out of this. So that's, you know, one of the benefits of our tool is we're able to turn things around very quickly because we already have all this data and this information and the partners and the tools. So in those instances, you know, we work with a lot of partners. They'll send us an email. Hey, I have 3 weeks, 4 weeks that this is going to expire. I want to be able to use this to achieve some of my marketing goals and actually put this to use. And so that is, you know, often a catalyst for, you know, I wouldn't say it's the primary use case, but it's definitely a use case we see pretty often. But yeah, some of the other categories and you know, use cases, I think with that retailer targeting, it's definitely opened up. We see a lot of marketing teams that are also working with sales teams that want to be, you know, doing things for retailers. So a brand like Milk Bar that had just gotten into Wegmans. They used our tool to identify drive-in movie theaters, family events, co-working offices that not only were within a certain mile radius of a Wegmans, but actually being able to understand, are the audiences at those events, do they shop at Wegmans? So we help them, you know, target specific opportunities that have those audiences. And then the sales team was able to use that program and campaign with the retailer when they had their quarterly meeting and share with them what they were doing to be innovative and finding new ways to be driving traffic and being a good partner and, you know, letting people know that they can get Milk Bar at the Wegmans location. So, you know, the retailer gave them some additional support as added value. They were so excited about the program and the opportunity for that. Home goods, you know, personal care is another big one. OxiClean ran a program with their Odor Blasters brand that they were testing some new audiences, like at the gyms and fitness studios, that active lifestyle consumer. You know, they weren't sure if that was a consumer that was going to resonate with the product. So, you know, they were able to use our platform to kind of run some tests and see how that performed. You know, alcohol, beer, wine, and spirits traditionally has been challenged to sample outside of retail or at on-premise locations. So, you know, we've worked with Anheuser-Busch to help them open up opportunities to partner with happy hour events, with golf tournaments at country clubs and other non-traditional spaces and places in order to do that. You know, the last category I think that we're probably the most excited about is actually retailers starting to use our tool and retail media teams like, you know, GoPuff, for instance. They were working with Pepsi. Pepsi wanted to go a bit bigger on a college program and campaign. GoPuff wanted to tap into not just the shopper dollars, but be able to tap into those incremental brand marketing dollars that they had available for these programs and campaigns. And so we were able to build out a program for GoPuff and Pepsi cooperatively that were able to, you know, market these new products on college campuses that were pushing directly back to the GoPuff app that ended up driving a 22% sales lift during the window of the campaign for Pepsi products on GoPuff in those markets. So we're starting to work more closely with retailers, both digital and physical retailers. Obviously, as you guys know, closing the loop on that is key to unlocking that. But yeah, we're seeing, you know, across the board, food, beverage, home goods, personal care, alcohol, a lot of different categories that are able to take advantage of the opportunities.
Do you hear that, Sri? They do sampling programs with Bill Murray and Chevy Chase at Bushwood Country Club. For you Gen Zennials, Google the term Caddyshack and you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Caddyshack. Yeah, let us know where so Peter and I can show up here and there by surprise.
Exactly. I get no respect, I tell you. All right. So mentioning GoPuff and Wegmans, great segue to talk about the retail aspect of what you do. I understand that Recess recently released a research report to help marketers understand where gym goers, college students, and other affinity audiences are most likely to shop, therefore highlighting some great targeting sampling opportunities. What'd you learn from this? Give us a scoop in the background behind this, would you please?
Yeah, this was really exciting for us, kind of the first large research report we've released as a company. And all of that kind of retailer audience targeting capability is what was powering the majority of that. So some really interesting insights, some, you know, less surprising than others, but we looked at kind of across our network, gyms, fitness studios, family events, music festivals, college campuses, where were these retailers ranked in terms of the affinity for it? So had some interesting results. Walmart came out very highly indexed on drive-in movie theaters as their top category, which, you know, I know they ran a program actually in their parking lot around drive-in movie theaters. So they may have already known something that we didn't before that in that world. You know, Whole Foods was highly correlated with farmers markets, 7-Eleven highly correlated to sporting events. So I think this type of information is interesting, you know, as brands are thinking about where they want to build these programs and campaigns out and which, you know, partners they might want to choose. If they're working in the fitness space, you know, we see that chains like Equinox or Orange Theory, you know, over-index on Whole Foods, but an F45, a Crunch Fitness, you know, over-indexes on more of a value consumer. So Costco, Walmart are more popular at those locations. Similar in the co-working space, you know, WeWork, very highly ranking with Whole Foods, with Target, but, you know, a Regis, an Expansive, more so, you know, Sam's Club, we see Kroger, some of those other ones. So this data, you know, has been really helpful for a lot of our customers as they're making these decisions about who do they want to partner with, where do they want to invest their dollars. If there is a, you know, a retailer lens to it or a shopper lens that they're putting to it, This can just give them an additional layer of data now. You know, I think CPG marketers, you know, everybody needs to be using more data in their decisions. And this was one category where it was still kind of like, ah, that looks like a good option to choose from. So we think that this will be a great asset for folks, for marketers that want to just get that much more drilled down into reaching the exact target audience that they want to reach with these programs.
So clearly your partnership extends into retail. You're working with third-party service providers, and you gave us examples of brands, specifically beverage was a great example. You gave it Pepsi right back here, stuff going on with GoPuff, et cetera. My curiosity goes outside the CPG realm, especially as you work with those that are physical, which are frequent visitors of the various gyms that you describe. I'm going to guess that you guys touch way beyond just the CPG domain and you touch other categories as well. So can you give us a quick overview of what other categories could benefit from such a capability, experiential sampling-based programming? And what role would the retailer play in those categories? Is it similar to food and bev?
Yeah, there's absolutely other, you know, brand categories we're starting to work with. Some of those companies, you know, they don't necessarily have a physical product, but they do have offers or opportunities that either can be promoted digitally or on some kind of, you know, handout with a QR code, some kind of call to action to a digital conversion. So quick serve restaurants is a big category that we're focused on next. We work with Panera Bread, companies like Ann Pizza. You know, they were trying to reach college students within 1 mile of one of their franchise locations. So we can get like hyper local with where that targeting is and drive people, you know, directly back into those locations. Consumer tech companies that are looking to drive acquisition. So, you know, we work with DoorDash, Square's the Cash App product. So they're looking to reach, you know, both of those brands are looking to reach college students and get them signed up and kind of locked into their service early on in their, you know, kind of customer affinity making. So, you know, those digital partners that are looking to go beyond just paid social or programmatic from an acquisition standpoint and looking at this as actually a channel to scalably acquire new customers. And then retailers, you've talked about retailers, but that would probably be the other bucket that we're really focusing on. So in addition to working with the retail media teams like GoPuff, we're working with the marketing teams at retailers like Whole Foods that, you know, want to be reaching consumers, want to be driving them into their stores. With Whole Foods, again, it was how can we get those college students to become loyal Whole Foods shoppers when they're going to the grocery store for the first time without mom and dad? You know, they're moving to their off-campus apartment, they're moving out of the dorms, they're going to be buying things for the first time. You know, how do we do that? Or a company like Instacart, you know, they wanted to reach B2B shoppers. So the office managers that are buying groceries at the WeWork. So they're using our tool to reach people within those co-working communities, within those business communities to drive them to be using Instacart to be making those purchases. So yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of interesting categories for us to explore. We are still, you know, very focused on CPG overall, food and bev, personal care, home goods, a lot of those products, but definitely excited about where the future can go as well.
Thank you, Jack. I have the pleasure of asking the last question of our conversation today. So I want you to pull out your crystal ball, give it a little polish, and I want you to share with us your thoughts on where the future of this experiential and out-of-store sampling space is going. And what's your prediction for the role that you think Recess can play in help shaping this?
Well, I might borrow a prediction to kick it off, but Andrew Lipsman, I saw a chart from him recently that had, I think he had in-store and streaming and display and videos, kind of retail media 2.0. And then he had product samples as retail media 3.0 focused on driving lifetime value. So, you know, if I had to pull out my crystal ball, I think this ad category of experiential sampling sponsorships, it's a multi-billion dollar ad category. And I think, you know, those incremental brand dollars are just kind of sitting there ripe for retail media to capture, you know, with retailers giving, you know, the ability to target those audiences out of store. And then, you know, their ability to provide the closed loop measurement, I think is something that traditional ad agencies or, you know, big sponsorship players like Live Nation are just not going to be able to compete with. So much in the same way traditional publishers are losing ground and dollars to retail media networks, I think there's a huge opportunity for retailers in this space to take advantage of tools like ours and others to be building these programs out of store along the path to purchase and driving consumers back in, you know, either in store or online. So I think we're starting to see that with, you know, partners like GoPuff and DoorDash. And I think we're kind of earlier conversations with larger retailers about, you know, how could this be experiential, could be a new retail media unit, you know, this world of omni-channel sampling and leveraging these affinity points in these communities, you know, could give retailers the ability to be ubiquitous at the drive-in movie theater, at your kid's Little League game, at the college campus, and, you know, be engaging brands via their customers, via these CPG brands, but driving those consumers to their app, their digital destinations, in-store. So yeah, I think longer term, I think there's a, as we're seeing across the board, you know, retail media is kind of eating a lot of these different ad categories. And I think, you know, sampling, sponsorship, experiential is just going to be another one that will eventually head that way as well.
I think we see eye to eye on the crystal ball, and you certainly sharpened it pretty well out there and polished it too. So let me remind the audience that you can find all of our content by going to the URL cpgguys.com. That easy. And if you think you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to a community discussion just like Jack did today, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com and maybe you can join us on the podcast. Don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com in the navigation bar at the top. We ask you to do this because it tells us how we're doing, whether we have the right conversations, and whether we have the right person speaking to us on the other side over here. So I'll encourage you to do that. And sincerely, from the bottom of our heart, from Peter, me, and Brian, thank you for the 28,500 followers on LinkedIn. We know this is a very big number on LinkedIn, and the show doesn't exist without you. Thank you for all the messages you send us, the things you ask us, those likes, clicks, comments, and encouraging us to be better. Jack, I can't thank you enough for joining us on this podcast and bringing attention to a much-deserved topic which isn't getting enough of the conversation in the industry. So I sincerely thank you for doing that.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks so much.
Mr. Bond, it's that time of the show. What do we learn today?
Well, let's start off by saying that Jack succinctly articulated the value proposition and the power of in-person marketing, right? He used the term tasting is believing, and I absolutely agree that that is the truth. There's nothing better than the tactile experience of holding or the sensation of tasting a food product. What kind of sets Recess apart is their ability to help organizations coordinate the delivery of products to venues that are in proximity to where their affinity target audience is shopping and behaving. I think that's critically important. And to do so in a mechanism that takes a lot of the cost and effort out of organizations that aren't focused on doing that. Like a CPG brand is not about creating a sampling. They're about manufacturing products and getting them into retail. And driving the demand for that through sampling is a really great mechanism that they can easily outsource to a great company that has a powerful platform like Recess. I love the fact that he started, as I mentioned, the aspiring Ari Gold role as a talent agent. I can see him flying around on the private jet. May still happen, Jack, but in any event, you know, any story that involves Mark Cuban as a seed investor usually ends up with a happy ending. So I'm very cautiously optimistic that that's going to be the case for you guys. I love the fact that you kind of transition from event production to understanding, wait a minute, these are consumer and shopper touchpoint opportunities. And if we can connect the dots in a measurable way, that could be really powerful. And being able to perceive that other forms of media like influencers were moving to online marketplaces said, okay, we can create a new type of mechanism that until now, because of technology limitations, we didn't have kind of the software capabilities to actually scale that, but now they existed. So it seemed like the time was right to create a really powerful mechanism. And in order to build that big business, it had to be scalable, right? And that doing custom work was never going to do it like they were in event management, but providing a framework and a mechanism to execute something over and over, different venues, but basically the same kind of activation in terms of the logistics, that could be a repetitive, scalable, and actually monetizable type of activity. And the pandemic was actually transformational. For us, Sri, the pandemic is what allowed us to create the podcast, right? So it was actually, in our case, an opportunity. And I think that's what Jack said was taking place for them, right? they were able to acquire a lot of customers because there were so few events kind of going on. You couldn't do in-store sampling. They were one of the few options outside of digital to actually reach consumers in real life, right? That's very compelling. And brands wanted to get their products in the hands of niche communities. He gave examples like people working at specialty gyms, and they wanted to get product in the hands of people at pivotal points in their lives, right? Moving into an apartment, buying their first house. All those are really aspirational, but to be able to do so in a measurable way, because brands, in order to shift budget for more traditional mechanisms for upper funnel awareness, linear television, print advertising, measurement is what's going to help drive the budget reallocation. And that's what they wanted to bring to the picture. So their platform allows targeting the right audience, getting the samples to the right venue in proximity to where those kind of affinity shoppers are going, particularly when it's associated with the retail, couple it with other external companion programs, Ibotta, Fetch, all of those. Or I come from the world of UGC. Maybe you're trying to do sampling so that you can create product ratings and reviews that help your organic search results on e-commerce marketplaces. Really powerful. Those are all really good examples. He gave a couple of case studies, Milk Bar with Wegmans. And of course, I love the one on GoPuff because it ties into their retail media network. And then they did some research on the retail side of things around really how to connect with the specific retailers and what types of shoppers are shopping different types of retailers. So that could further enhance their affinity audience targeting. Really great, great information there. Gave a couple examples, one around targeting Kroger shoppers and what have you. And then, when we asked him towards the end, where's the future going? He echoed something that we've heard on this podcast countless times in the last year. It was a year ago, Sri, that you and I met with Andrew Lipsman at Shop Talk. And he talked about, there is a growing third leg of the retail media stool in store. And he said, there's a lot of opportunity there, right? Out-of-store experiential, according to Jack, is going to become the next interesting inventory ad unit for retail media. I absolutely agree with it. And that means there's a huge opportunity for retailers to take advantage of Recess and their targeting capabilities and logistic capabilities. So this was a very illuminating conversation. If I'm a brand and I'm trying to actually use sampling to drive trial and ultimately stimulate physical purchase, seems to me like Recess has built a better mousetrap that they can avail themselves of and just dispense with a whole lot of effort and cost that they would have to do to try to create this on their own. Like, why reinvent the wheel, Sri? That's what I took from this.
Wow, one heck of a summary. And let me close it out by saying sampling takes place in store all across the country at this stage. But what these guys have done is also connected the dots back to retail media, low funnel activation, as well as with third-party partners like Fetch and Ibotta from an incentive perspective. What to me, the music I hear in my ears is that means better ROI across the board for sampling. For brand marketers, the justification ability just went up a notch. So thank you, Peter, for that great summary. Thank you, Jack, joining me on the show today. That's a wrap. We will see you soon in another episode of the CPG Guide.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.